You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Transgender healthcare has been around for decades, and that care is highly individualized. No two gender journeys are the same. But decisions that were once only reserved between a patient and a doctor or other health professional have now exploded in the political arena. When it comes to transgender rights, debates and legislation around gender-neutral bathrooms, drag shows, storybooks, and sports are heated and divisive. This year alone, there have been more than 140 bills across the country targeting gender-affirming care, mostly aimed at limiting care for youth. Cap Radio's new podcast, This Is What It Feels Like, puts listeners in the shoes of everyday people, at the center of issues that are often overlooked or politicized by society. And the first episode explores navigating healthcare as a trans person. Today, we're going to explore gender-affirming care. Lisa Thantrana is a regional counsel for health at Legal Services of Northern California, and Dr. Tandy A is a pediatric endocrinologist and the founder of the Stanford Pediatric and Adolescent Gender Clinic. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Lisa, I want to start with you. You are part of a nonprofit legal aid organization. You provide free direct legal services to low-income people and people who are marginalized. How did you become involved with serving the trans community in Sacramento?
We've operated a medical legal partnership with the Gender Health Center since about 2012. And so I became involved by, I started attending their twice monthly hormone clinics that they hold at the Gender Health Center, where folks who can't get access to hormones anywhere else come to get a free prescription.
And you have been working as a community partner there for a decade.
Yep.
Correct?
Yep, that's right.
How has your work in that time there evolved in the people that you serve?
The issues definitely have evolved quite a lot. When I first started going to the hormone clinic, I used to see pretty much every single hormone prescription get denied for coverage by the insurance company. And I, at, you know, 10 years on, I almost never see hormone denials anymore. So the denials have shifted. We still see denials of gender-affirming care, but not of hormones. So we've kind of moved the needle a bit.
So there, yeah, it's constantly evolving. And especially as this issue, as I think just people become more aware of this issue. Dr. A, you're the founder of the Stanford Pediatric and Adolescent Gender Clinic. What happens at a gender clinic?
Yes. So when people come, I think there's a lot of thoughts, you know, you're going to come see me and you'll walk out with a bag of hormones. But actually, we support services anywhere from the parents learning about what is a gender identity for their child, how to advocate for their child in school or activities, all the way, of course, to the different medical services. But essentially, it's the first time, I think, in which we give a young person an opportunity to talk about when do they think about their gender being not aligned with what they were assigned at birth, and to give us that gender journey story and for medical providers to actually listen to that.
Yeah, gender affirming care is so individualized, and there's a very wide spectrum of what that means to each individual person. Dr. A, I imagine you must see a lot of family units that come in with the best intentions, you know, but they're kind of navigating in the unknown, and they are concerned about how to best support their child's gender identity. You've been researching this about how parents can best support transgender teens. What did you find?
Yes. You know, the number one thing that when we ask parents and their children, their teens, about what was the first thing that you would want, the teens actually said was to be heard, to be respected of what they were revealing to their parents, and for them just to listen. And I know for parents, sometimes it's hard just to listen and not go straight to advice. And so the second thing the teens also wanted was to have a place of physical safety, saying, you know, when I just want to have a person to talk to be loved, to be hugged, and to know that I'm safe at home. Whereas for parents, the top thing was, you know, what services do we need to get you into? How can, you know, you be thinking about this? Do you understand positives and negative side effects? But really, the teen just wants to be heard and to be able to have a loving conversation with their parents.
Yeah, Lisa, I see you nodding along with that. I mean, you see that firsthand at Gender Health Center.
Yeah, absolutely. We do a lot of name and gender marker change petitions for folks. And we definitely get a lot of calls from minors who are not old enough to petition on their own behalf. And so, you know, we talk to them about, you know, you need your parents to sign the petition, and talk to them about, are your parents supportive? And so there's quite a range. Like some kids are like, yeah, absolutely, my parents will definitely sign and they'll help me pay for the filing fee. And others are like, there's absolutely no way. And so we ask them, like, you know, would your parents be willing to come and meet with a counselor and talk through, or with one of our doctors, talk through what this means? Sometimes it's a maybe, but sometimes it's an absolutely not. And it's like, I'm just going to have to wait until I'm 18 to change my name. Then, which a name change is so important. It really impacts, access to healthcare. You know, if you think about a kid going to a doctor's appointment and waiting in the waiting room and then having their dead name called out, it really doesn't match their outward gender expression. It really outs that person to the entire waiting room. So it really can make that person shy away, exclude themselves from all facets of their social life and medical, educational, all of those spheres.
I want to play a clip that really illustrates this. It's so heartwarming. It's from our new podcast, This Is What It Feels Like. And there's an episode about gender-affirming care, which is why we're having this conversation. And this clip is from a 47-year-old trans woman in Yuba City named Eliza Claiborne Crosby. And she's talking about what brings her joy.
What brings me joy in my day-to-day is when I go to my mailbox and my mailman says, here you go, ma'am. My joy comes from my story and all that I've overcome. I'm blessed. I got to walk down the aisle with my dad, a man who grew up in the 50s, a man who is uber masculine, a man who is a man of faith, of God. And he walked me down the aisle. And when the pastor said, who gives this woman away? He said, I do. That brought me joy.
Dr. A, I mean, can you just talk about what kind of support and affirmation, what this means to people like Eliza and patients that you serve?
Yes, I think, you know, it's listening to that clip that was just amazing, because you can just hear it in the voice and just in their heart, right? You're getting to be authentic. You get to live as you are, that you've always known in your heart and in your mind about who you are, and you're not role playing anymore. And it's just a matter of everyone respecting that person's identity. And so this can come on from the time someone is young, waiting till the time they're much older. And it doesn't mean that one person is less transgender or not, depending on the time in which they come out. But it just really affirms. And I think when people can just live a life freely of who they are and to be authenticated, it just comes with that good health, happiness, less depression, all this negativity that you hear about, and that all of that can go away in just us accepting someone for who they are.
Dr. A, you know, given the fact that there are more than 100 anti-LGBTQ plus, you know, really bills that have been circulating across the country outside of California, I mean, are you seeing more interest from people outside of the state wanting to go to a clinic like yours at Stanford?
We do get patients who do travel to Stanford for care, but, you know, as a premier pediatric treatment center, we get care for all subspecialties and we treat people nationally and internationally. But there are families, what I see, not just who are coming for care, but more of those who have left those states and may have moved to California for care. So families, you know, if they're able to afford it, have decided that maybe the state they had been in is not the right place for them to be able to raise their young person at home. And so they decide it's time to move, and they're having to give up, you know, a lot of maybe other social networks, family members, and really for the child as well in settling in California.
Yeah, Lisa, I see you nodding along as well. You provide free legal services. You're a community partner of Gender Health Center in Sacramento. Are you seeing this as well, people reaching out from outside of California?
Yeah, absolutely. We've definitely started to see a trickle of people in the last couple months moving from other states and specifically saying that they were fleeing anti-trans legislation and reestablishing themselves here in Sacramento, looking to get on benefits, looking to reestablish a support networks, join support groups, and get connected with a gender-affirming doctor. So we've started to see that. But I think it also impacts people who live in California. I think that people think that because we're a blue state that we're sort of protected from those anti-trans legislation. But there are people who live and work in California but have health plans that are regulated by other states. Like maybe their company that they work for is based in other states. I've had a mom reach out to me, and her employer health plan is regulated in Tennessee. And she said, like, I have a kid who's trans, and what does that mean for, you know, his prescriptions? Like, are they going to continue to be covered if this legislation passes? So it's going to impact people in California as well.
Yeah. What do you want people to take away from this conversation? And also the first episode of This Is What It Feels Like, if many people might be learning about gender affirming care for the first time.
Definitely listen to the podcast. I listened to it last night. It was wonderful. And I think just learning as much as possible and being affirming allies. If you're not part of the trans or queer community, doing everything you can to be an ally.
Hmm. Dr. A, I have 30 seconds left. What would you like people to take away from the conversation?
I think to be open to the conversation. If you're not, you know, familiar with the terminology or know people, get to know them, have a conversation, and actually learn what the heart of the matter is, and not just maybe rely on what you might be, you know, seeing in the media, but really get to know the people.
That is Dr. Tandy A, a pediatric endocrinologist and founder of the Stanford Pediatric and Adolescent Gender Clinic. Lisa Thantrana is a regional counsel for health at Legal Services of Northern California. They are discussing gender affirming care in partnership with Cap Radio's new podcast, This Is What It Feels Like. New episodes are released every Thursday. I'm Vicky Gonzalez, and that is Insight for today. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here on Monday.
Support for This Is What It Feels Like comes from Comcast, delivering 10G broadband access, mobile, and entertainment to customers with technology to power the future.